As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Big thing on Total Soccer Show, our weekly deep dive into one of the biggest topics in soccer. At a time when we might have been talking about the climaxes to European leagues, the Champions League final, or any other exciting topic in the beautiful game, we must turn our attention to racism in the sport and the evolving situation surrounding Vinicius Jr. The Real Madrid star was racially abused by fans at Valencia's Mestalla Stadium last weekend in the kind of incident that happens far too frequently in La Liga and the European game. Although his red card for protesting the fan behaviour has now been rescinded, the reaction within Spain has not been one of universal support for the Brazilian forward. Today we're looking at the Spanish media reaction to the incident, the culture of racism in Spain and beyond, and what changes may come after this incident. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today we have Mr. Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
Hello.
We have Mr. Graham Rothman. Hello, Graham.
Hello.
And we do not have Mr. Joe Lowry with us. Just the three of us today to have a chat about this one. Where do we start with this one? Graham, why don't you give us a little Precian overview of the incident that has caused international headlines across continents for this one, with the incident that had Vinicius Jr. Sent off at the Mestalla, on Sunday. No definitive article there. Thank you.
So Valencia were hosting Real Madrid in a La Liga match on Sunday, and I was watching this match live on the TV, and the first time I became aware of something unsettling happening was in the first half when Vinicius Jr. was pointing at someone in the crowd, making a real point of highlighting someone in the crowd. Obviously, you can't really hear what's being said on the broadcast, or I couldn't at that time. But given how Vinicius has repeatedly called out racism and considering how he has been a target for racism this season and how unhappy and upset he was in that moment, it quickly became apparent what had happened. He'd been racially abused. The referee then stops the match using the racism protocol that exists in La Liga, and I think that might be a FIFA protocol, so that exists in all FIFA leagues. And an announcement was made over the PA system at Mestalla, warning that the match would be postponed if the racist abuse continued. Police came out, they led two fans away from the stand, and eventually after about 6 or 7 minutes, the match restarted. But from that point, it was a very, very stressful watch. You could tell some sort of abuse was continuing. Vinicius was unsettled throughout the match. He continued to talk to the referee. And as I say, you could tell players were stressed and on edge. Vinicius, understandably, more than anyone else. Then late on, Vinicius was involved in a bit of a scuffle between the two teams. Hugo Juro had him, he's a Valencia player, he had him in a headlock for a good 5 seconds or so. And so Vinicius lashes out a bit. I read that as him kind of going, get off of me. That incident goes to VAR. The headlock portion of that incident isn't shown to the referee. And so the referee only sees Vinicius lashing out. He's shown a red card. And he walks off to very loud abuse from fans while making a gesture that apparently was in reference to how Valencia are in a relegation battle, and so the gesture was, you're going down or something like that.
He held up two fingers to indicate that they'd be in the second division.
There we go. That was gesture. After the match, a lot more footage comes out of racist chanting from the fans outside Mestalla before kickoff. That footage showed fans shouting mono, which means monkey, at Vinicius. There were also a lot of videos that had been doctored on Twitter that I saw, so it was kind of difficult to tell what was real and what wasn't in kind of the 24 hours after the match. But a number of the videos were eventually verified by La Liga and the authorities. So there is absolutely no doubt at all that there was racist abuse from a large number of people. And as you kind of referenced at the top of the show, Ryan, the reaction in Spain, how this latest episode with Vinicius has been dealt with, has been particularly depressing.
It has, Taylor. One would expect uniform condemnation of this kind of behaviour in Spain, but even from Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, not quite the line that has been universally put out there.
No, I mean, we should expect that. I think La Liga thus far have proven themselves not as capable of handling racist abuse or allegations of racism. Vinicius highlighted that in the post he made about the number of times he's been abused and the lack of response from the league. But we've seen that from Valencia, who seem to have doubled down on the idea that they are the victims in this one, especially after there was some punitive action taken against the club. We've seen that in the media and from La Liga president Javier Tebas as well, as you said, Ryan. The response seems to have been, you all don't understand Spain, you all don't understand the culture, you misheard what was said, and honestly, you're bringing it on yourself a little bit, like you need to not take the bait. Even a lot of Madrid supporters in the comments and in like message boards I've seen talking about how like he brings this on himself and he needs to learn to not let defenders get in his head, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to frustrate him, and he's got to learn just to play his game. And I think that is the thing that seems to have, I don't know, struck a chord with many, Vinicius among them, is I think the response seems to be still blaming him and still putting it on, what is Vinicius doing to make this happen? Why is he the one who's getting it? And I think that second one is more fair of a question, but it does seem like the response has been to blame the player and blame the people who are criticizing the reactions of the people who should have reacted differently. Yeah.
And it's worth outlining exactly what Javier Tebas, who is the head of La Liga, actually said on Twitter. So in the hours after this match, he thought it'd be a good idea to get involved in a back and forth with Vinicius on Twitter, where he pointed the finger at the player for not meeting the league more readily on the subject of racism. As you would expect, this prompted a furious response by Vinicius, who posted, and I'm just going to read out word for word what he said. Once again, instead of criticizing racists, the president of La Liga appears on social media to attack me. As much as you talk and pretend not to read, the image of your championship has been hit by this. See the responses to your posts and you will have a surprise. Omitting yourself only makes you equal to racists. And that was just one of, I think, maybe three or four social media statements that Vinicius made. Maybe the one that resonated most was where he said the championship that once belonged to Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Cristiano and Messi today belongs to racists, which is quite a statement for one of the faces of La Liga, the best players in that league and in the world, to say that about the league that he is playing in. As I say, that is quite the statement, and that has resonated around the world. And I think certain parts of the Spanish media certainly didn't cover themselves in glory in the way that they covered this story. So just to read out a couple more quotes, you had a journalist saying it was unacceptable for Ancelotti to call of Mestalla racist, which is kind of besides the point. You had several journalists and pundits equating some of Vinicius's gestures, which, as we say, were kind of pointing down and saying Valencia were going down, to the racism that he received, basically making the argument, well, you know, there was abuse from the Valencia fans, but look at what Vinicius did. And you even had the co-commentator on, and I have to admit, I didn't catch this live. I was watching this game live, and I was also watching it on La Liga TV. But I've seen these quotes in news articles from the co-commentator that was working for La Liga TV. And this is a direct quote. We should stand against racism, but we should also say that he is not an angel. He is not perfect. Sometimes he provokes the other teams. Yeah. After the racial abuse, we cannot say he is a saint. He is always making mistakes. Which just kind of sums up the whole misguided argument that is made against Vinicius in the Spanish media, that by some of his actions, he is justifying the racist abuse that he is receiving, which obviously shouldn't be part of the discussion at all. There's nothing that he can do that would justify the racist abuse that he's received in this incident and throughout this season. And there's been numerous cases this season as well.
This whole episode is going to be me trying not to go on extended rants. I will try to continue that here. But yeah, again, that perception that he is doing things when in reality he's playing football and taking people on and maybe embarrassing people, maybe going for a Meg when he could have done something else, but that's what players do. And I feel like Messi did that on occasion. Like Ronaldo has certainly done that on occasion. I don't recall either of them being hanged in effigy. I think there is a deliberate willingness among some people to, I think, to overlook the commonality or the reasons why maybe Vinny might be getting some of this racist attention and instead pointing it on, oh, he's a youngster who's antagonizing people, as though holding up two fingers is the same thing as chunks of a stadium doing monkey chants and calling him a monkey and other even worse words.
But even that argument that he's antagonizing people, and look, as I say, that's irrelevant to the whole discussion, but let's deconstruct that to begin with. What's he doing to antagonize people? I mean, he is, the argument is, oh, he dances when he scores goals. All right, because we've never seen that from football players before. They never dance when they're celebrating goals. He has repeatedly pointed out racism. I don't know if that's what people think is being antagonistic. I mean, he stops this game to point out someone in the crowd. I would say, well done. That's very brave of Vinicius to do that. That needs to happen. So how exactly is he antagonizing people? Yep.
I think it's really frustrating because it's whataboutism, basically, what they're doing here. And you can't really use that as an argument when there's been clear evidence of racist abuse. Like, it just doesn't fly in any situation. I think for the reaction of Tebas as well, I'm trying to get my head around his mindset because obviously he's trying to think, I've got to protect this league. I've got to protect the league as a property. But in trying to protect the league by sort of shifting blame like that, he's doing harm to its reputation, Taylor. So surely what he's trying to do, he's achieving the exact opposite.
I don't want to beat a dead horse here because I've said this on this show already in relation to this incident. I said this in the conversation I had with Elliot Barr from Can I Kick It about racism in different leagues and what leagues have done to combat it. But I'll say it again here and then I will try to stop repeating it. I think this is an example of something we've seen in Serie A most recently, or at least most recently in my mind, of supporters groups arguing we are not being racist. We are trying to get under the player's skin, to upset the player, to bother them such that they are not playing their game as effectively as they can. And I think so then there's this idea that we're just going to say whatever we have to say to take him out of his game, to make him frustrated. So we're not being racist. We're being competitive. And I think that is what Javier Tebas is definitely emphasizing, that you don't understand the culture. You don't understand what these people are doing. You're taking it personally, basically. And I think it's worth noting, we're three white guys talking about this. Javier Tebas does not know what it is to be a black man in Spain. And plenty of black players, historically, but even recently, have talked about the racism that they have experienced. Racism is obviously not limited to Spain. I live in the United States. There is plenty of racism here. That doesn't mean we can't talk about this specific incident and what it means for the broader league, because there's racism everywhere. We have to spotlight it as much as we can. But I think that is probably what Tebas is doing, is looking at this not from the perspective of the injured, the hurt party, the party who has been consistently, I would say consistently abused, and oftentimes that is racially abused, and is instead seeing it as, oh, you're a crybaby player who doesn't understand what these fans are doing. You got to toughen up, son. You got to be better at that. And that does also seem to echo what I saw some Madrid message boards talking about, how when he gets fouled, he gets up and complains to the ref, and he always has a word with the official about how much he's getting kicked, and he can never just let stuff go. And that was the entirety of Barcelona for a good chunk of time, surrounding the referee and complaining about every single foul, or oftentimes complaining about fouls. The same thing for other Madrid players. I think, again, the commonality here is that Vinicius Jr. is a black man, and so I think gets more of that negative attention because of it, because of he's a showman. He's not just sort of being the, like, I think Messi, I mentioned him earlier, Messi oftentimes gets fouled and he just has that look of like, I can't believe they fouled me again. I'm so over this. But you never see him get up and be really, really indignant about it. Or maybe rarely you did in Barcelona. And I think there's this idea of like just be a professional like Messi was, ignoring that these are not the same situations at all.
Yeah, I can understand to a certain degree why Tebas has the image of his league in his mind to a certain extent. I'll come on to my second point, but the reputation of La Liga has taken an absolute kicking this week. Rightfully so, I would argue. But this is a story that has really transcended not just Spanish football, but football in general. I mean, you've got Lula, the Brazilian president, making public comments about it. The lights on the Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro were turned off in protest of what Vinicius is, or in solidarity with Vinicius over what he's facing. You have Marcus Rashford, Kylian Mbappe, Neymar, all making social media posts in support of Vinicius Jr. You have a statement from the US Secretary of State on this story. This is a story that has resonated in the US. I noticed today on the New York Times, this Vinicius story is in the top five most read stories on the New York Times today. So yeah, absolutely, La Liga's reputation has taken a kick in. And I think you can see that. I watched the game last night from La Liga and they have a message. I can't remember what the message is exactly, but they have a message on the screen permanently at the moment that is, you know, some sort of slogan, some sort of anti-racism slogan. So they are certainly aware of their reputation taking a kicking. But my first reaction if I'm Tebas is not to think of what does this mean for my league's reputation and image. It's empathy. That's the thing that's missing in all of this. All the reaction, all the responses, empathy. I mean, anyone who watched that game at the weekend saw how distressed and upset Vinicius Jr. is. He looks on the verge of tears at times. How can you see that and then react in the way that Spanish media have, that Barajas, the Valencia manager, has, that various Valencia and national newspapers have, and that Tebas, the league head? How can you react in that way?
Yeah, I think that's the point I was trying to make. He's trying to do crisis management there. He's trying to do some reputational stuff for the league. But in trying to do that and protect his property, so to speak, he's not seen the wood for the trees. And he's ended up doing more damage than good, basically, because of that complete lack of empathy, as you say, Graham.
I mean, there's crisis management that effectively addresses the issue, publicly acknowledges it, and then attempts to work towards resolving the crisis versus fingers in your ears, no, you're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about, you don't get the culture, you just need to kind of toe the line.
Good crisis management.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing that like is also telling to me when we're talking about the lack of empathy, that there has not been, it doesn't seem to be, a genuine look at the league, from at least from Javier Tebas, for example. Let's stick with him for a second. There doesn't seem to have been an attempt to look at, this is the ninth, I believe, incident since 2021 or thereabouts against Vinicius Jr. specifically. And there is not a, okay, this is the final straw. There has to be something done. We have to look at what's going on. It took an independent review panel, or a theoretically independent review panel, to reverse that red card, to take some punitive action. It just seems like Tebas's response has been to like, yeah, here, you, let me just tell you what's going on. It's like interrupting your partner when they're complaining about their day to try to propose solutions instead of actually hearing the issue. And in this case, when you're not only not listening, but interrupting to be like, maybe you were wrong, though, maybe you did it wrong, is a shocking approach from a league president, when I think that would be frowned upon even in just a basic relationship. So him doing that publicly on a global stage is a big old head scratcher for me.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. When we come back, a little more on how the evening went for this this evening at the Mestalla, and much more of the reaction back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our big thing. We are discussing the Vinicius incident and Vinicius incidents, indeed, that have occurred throughout this season. Graham, lots of disappointing reactions, as we've outlined in part one of this podcast. But one which was good was Carlo Ancelotti, who went to great lengths to protect his player. Because Ancelotti is a class act, as we all know. And when asked questions about the game, immediately deferred to the incident and said, you know, the result is not important. That is not what happened tonight. And we need to be talking more about this. So could we talk about that reaction and maybe how the referee handled this game and things that could have been done differently, perhaps?
Yeah, so Ancelotti was absolutely furious in the post-match press conferences, more than one. As you say, refused to answer any questions on the match itself. We didn't discuss anything about this match in Weekend Review just because it felt completely irrelevant. This is the only story that mattered, and I think Ancelotti completely understood that. In terms of the referee, look, obviously it's maybe... It's a difficult gig, right? At the best of times, refereeing, and he can't know everything that is happening, and he did stop the match due to using the racism protocol. But the way he, particularly in that last phase of the match, kind of handled some of the Valencia players, I think, in particular, who weren't helping things at all. Hugo Juro, as I mentioned, had Vinicius in a headlock. The Valencia goalkeeper was very antagonistic towards Vinicius, and as far as I'm aware, wasn't spoken to at all in that situation. I think the referee maybe taking the goalkeeper aside and having a word with him, if not providing some sort of actual punishment in form of a card, would have been the right course of action at that moment. So yeah, I don't think the referee helped kind of quell things, but I do accept in that situation where, by all accounts, you have a lot of, you know, the argument with these incidents is always, well, you know, it's one or two bad apples. From the footage I've seen of this match and what happened before this match, more than one or two bad apples, and I can imagine that was a difficult situation and environment to handle if you're a referee.
Somehow we also never finish that expression, because the expression is one bad apple spoils the bunch, right? And maybe it was one or two to start, but I mean, it's pretty audible, it's pretty clear. And I think the reaction from the Valencia players... Largely, I think Patrick Kluivert is the only one to acknowledge or apologize for what happened. He did that in his Spanish TV interview, and I'm sure he was roundly applauded for that by Valencia supporters as opposed to probably booed. But I think when we talk about the reactions of the players on the pitch, again, it shows to me a lack of empathy, because I have to believe that the goalkeeper, for example, sees Vinicius Jr. getting into it with Valencia supporters and thinks like, hey, those are my supporters. Like, I'm going to step in. I'm going to defend my club. And I think that's because, again, speaking as a white man, if I'm getting, I've never been yelled at or really abused in a game, except for when I did something my coach didn't want me to do. And then I got yelled at a little bit, but certainly not abused. But I think if you haven't ever had to experience that, if it's my guess is that if it's not something that you've ever gone through, you're just going to hear it as like, yeah, the crowd's booing you. So what? Yeah, the crowd's yelling at you. So what? That happens to all of us all the time. And I think if you don't stop to consider the circumstances in the situation and stop to hear what the other person is saying and to actually listen to it or to understand it, even to try to process it better after the fact, you're not going to learn anything. You're just sort of becoming part of the problem. And that is largely what it felt like it was in the 24 to 48 hours after the incident, the altercation, is a lot of finger pointing back and forth, not a lot of acceptance that there are major issues that need to be dealt with.
Yeah. The thing I don't get about that reflex reaction that a lot of maybe players and certainly football fans have to kind of defend their own no matter what is, if I put myself in that situation, and thankfully I actually have never heard, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I personally haven't heard racist abuse in a game that I have been at. But let's just say there was a Stirling Albion fan racially abusing a player or anyone at a game that I was at. My reflex reaction would be, I don't want to be linked with them in any way. You know, if he or she's my fellow fan, I don't want to be linked with them in any way. So my reflex reaction is not to turn on the player, the victim, and say, well, you know, they're one of my own, I'm going to defend them. It's actually the other way around. So if I'm the Valencia goalkeeper, I think my reflex reaction is to be furious that anyone associated with my club is linking me to that. That's where I don't get that kind of as I say, in the moment, in the heat of the moment, there's that reflex. I don't really understand that reflex. I think I would, I mean, I'd like to think I would have a different reaction, certainly.
I don't get it either, Graham. And it's where I go back to the, like, fingers in the ears. If I don't hear what you're saying, then I don't have to acknowledge your experience, and I can just talk about my experience. Because we've had, since the incidents, we had this independent review panel step in. They reversed that red card. They hit Valencia with a partial stadium closure for 5 matches. Valencia fined 45,000 euros, the highest financial penalty imposed on a Spanish football club following racist abuse. And they have announced that they're going to appeal it, and they feel this is unjust and intentionally malicious, and none of that, like, they don't even have the audacity to give you a, like, yes, he was racially abused, but, like, it's just straight into the, this is unacceptable, this did not happen, and we continue to see a lack of accountability, a lack of acceptance from Valencia's part. I speak of Valencia as a whole unit. I'm sure there are supporters who do not agree with what happened. I'm sure there are players. But at the same time, when the club itself hasn't really, the only action they've taken is to basically double down on the initial stance, and that stance is racism. Again, it's a head scratcher, and when you keep scratching your head, it starts to feel like maybe there's a feeling of, yeah, this isn't a big deal, it'll go away, all the other ones have gone away, so why continue to care about this one?
Yeah, take the L and learn something, Valencia, is what we would hope would be the reaction there. But Graham, interesting you mentioned about that example of a fellow fan of your team, if they were racially abusing a player. I think in the UK, I'm at risk of editorializing and getting a bit anecdotal here, but I think in the UK, generally, if there was racist abuse, and it does happen in the Premier League and other UK leagues, then there'll be quite a contingent of the crowd who would turn and not accept that. And I think I know it's less of a taboo, basically, in certain countries, Spain, Italy, and a few others. It's less of a taboo, that kind of behaviour, if you're in the stands. You, as I say, US has racism issues, UK does as well, but it's generally less socially acceptable. Like, and if you look back historically at sport, Graham, you'll know this. Lewis Hamilton, famously at the Grand Prix, what was it, 2008, around that time, he is in the Grand Prix at Barcelona, and there are Spanish fans in wigs and blackface with t-shirts saying Hamilton's family, very famously racially abused, and nothing really particularly done about that. They were threatened. It was threatened that the FIA would take them out of the calendar. Didn't really happen. That same year, and you can look this up, there's a photo of the Olympic basketball team for Spain posing for a team photo, using their fingers to make slant eye gestures, basically, with the Olympics being in China. And they released a statement in defiance of that, saying they never intended it to have a racist tone. So it's about the parameters of what they deem to be racist, and it's about the extent to which it's taboo in certain cultures. And I'm not disparaging entire cultures here, please don't get me wrong there, but what I'm trying to say is it's generally accepted that there's an issue that it's less of a taboo in certain stadiums, certain leagues. Does that make sense, Graham?
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and I agree to a certain extent. I mean, and I used to believe what you were saying about in English and Scottish football stadiums, that there would be, like, that wouldn't be accepted. Unfortunately, in the last few years, we've had, like, a rise in cases of racist abuse, which maybe has challenged that view, and maybe I have been a bit naive about that. But I think it's certainly fair when we're talking about Spanish football and Spanish society in general. So I have done a bit of reading on this before this episode to try and inform myself as best as possible. But just to stick with the football side of things, I think about a few years ago, Antoine Griezmann dressing up as, was it a Harlem Globetrotter or something like that, a basketball player, and painting himself black. And not only doing that, posting the image to his Instagram page, to his however many followers he's got. And I do kind of struggle, obviously Antoine Griezmann being as a Frenchman, but has lived in Spain since, I think, the age of 14, and so is very much ingrained in that culture. I do kind of struggle to believe that a Premier League player would do something quite as overtly racist as that and post it on a public forum. So there is certainly, I believe, a culture of there's a difference in what is acceptable. And of course, racism doesn't exist solely within soccer. It's a societal problem. And I looked into some of Spain's societal problems. So we have had La Liga reporting fans to courts for racist abuse. So it happened after the Madrid derby. That went to court. Two fans went to court. the judge in that case basically adjudged that, well, it wasn't really that bad, and it was in the context, there's a direct quote, I don't have it in front of me, but there's a direct quote that essentially says, it was in the context of a football rivalry, which I think does kind of illustrate the cultural problem that exists in Spain. And there was an article in The Guardian this week using the Vinicius story as a bit of a news hook, but it was about Spanish society in general and wider racism and wider Spanish society. And there were some quotes from people on there about how there are very few politicians of colour and very few public figures of colour in general and on TV. And according to a survey, I'm reading directly from this article now on The Guardian, according to a survey published last year, 25% of Spaniards aged 15 to 29, the majority of them male, hold clearly racist or xenophobic views. And then figures from Spain's Interior Ministry show that Spanish police investigated 639 racist or xenophobic incidents in 2021, which was a 24% rise on 2019. So, of course, the UK has its own racism issues. I think you would find maybe similar numbers about the UK. I remember reading, particularly after Brexit, unfortunately, a rise in hate crimes and racist incidents. I can't deny that. But Spanish society is reflected somewhat in what happened at Mestalla and what has happened repeatedly to Vinicius this season, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's fair to say. And perhaps it's not necessarily a Spanish soccer problem as well, or a Spanish problem indeed. I could even look at, you could even talk about Italy, where I am, of course, has had its issues lately. Back in April, Romelu Lukaku, prominently in the news, was racially abused at Juventus. You'll remember in 2019, Serie A's anti-racism campaign, which used the faces of the monkeys, which was horrendously misjudged, shall we say. So it's just the different way things are approached. And I was at the Stadio Olimpico last night, and once again, I'm getting anecdotal here, but the kind of crowd that goes to soccer, certainly in Rome, is not diverse in any way. I don't know if that impacts opinions or cultural approaches to things, but I mean, where I grew up in London, you know, the classrooms in the schools are majority non-white. And I think that it affects your approach to things, certainly. So I realize I'm teetering on being accusatory here, which is not what I'm trying to do at all. I'm just trying to understand the different cultural approaches, Taylor. And I think the point is, it's not necessarily a Spanish soccer problem, but something that is being cultivated there somehow.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we're all uncomfortable about saying it's a problem in this one country that, like, I'll speak for myself, I've never been to Spain. I can't speak to what society's even like in Spain. What I can say is that, looking at this from an American perspective for a moment, which is always risky, because, you know, legacy of racism throughout the country's history. But I do think one thing, I'll speak for myself, one thing that has stood out to me this whole time is just how overt and obvious that, like, the racism was in this incident, but in many other incidents with Vinicius, but just how, like, what you all are talking about in theoretical situations at Sterling for a moment, or Sterling Albion, like, I feel like those, the ones that we've seen in the United States, are more isolated or at maybe like of ignorance, and when there is the, like, the tomahawk chop is seen as racist and there's a move to change sports team names. But how overt and aggressive and direct it was, it blows my mind a little bit. And I look at something like the Bubba Wallace incident in NASCAR, for people who don't remember that one. He is NASCAR's, I believe, only full-time black, or he is their only racer who is a full-time racer who is black in all of NASCAR. And he basically posted that he had found a noose in his garage. You can see how much I know about NASCAR. And the response to that is a sweeping investigation from NASCAR. I believe the FBI gets involved. Ultimately, the investigation determines that they can't figure out if it was an existing, like, noose, because it's a pull-down rope of the door that opens and closes the garage. So they couldn't determine if it was existing. They did say that, like, no other pull-down rope in any other facility had this same noose knot to it. But all the same, there's an investigation from NASCAR. The FBI is involved. NASCAR legends like Richard Petty comes out in criticism and talking about how there's no place for it. And there's a strong public response to like an incident that is minor, maybe done by an individual, if done at all. But the sentiment is still there, and the response to it is so sweeping. you don't see that in this situation. And I think it's worth noting, like, this is not, we keep talking about it, this is not isolated. It's other players have talked about it from going back decades, but I think more recently we've just seen it happen so often, and then the response is so muted from the league that it takes, again, an independent review panel saying, like, hey, we need to do some things, and you get quiet action. I think two people have been arrested at time of recording. I think the VAR official has been removed from VAR duties for the rest of the season, the one who didn't show the chokehold. So there's been some reaction, but I think in context of how overt the racist incident was or incidents were, it certainly doesn't feel like enough. It doesn't feel like much at all.
That's, for me, why this story has resonated more than any other, because, as we've referenced, and it's maybe worth outlining some of the cases that we've had this season. This is certainly not the first time that Vinicius has been the subject of racist abuse. There was an agent using a slur on TV last year. Then you had monkey chanting during a Madrid derby, which, as I mentioned, actually some fans were taken to court. Nothing actually happened, but there was more racist abuse at a game at Valladolid this season, then at Mallorca, then at the Camp Nou during a Clásico. And there are countless examples of racist social media posts towards Vinicius from prominent people, including a Cadiz midfielder who posted monkey emojis after Brazil were knocked out of the World Cup. Iñaki Williams has also spoken about, Athletic Club player, of course. He's spoken about the racist abuse that he has been on the end of in La Liga as well. But this is why, to get back to your point, Taylor, this is why it transcends, is because we all know the established routine by now, right? And that we can talk about, that's another discussion in itself, whether that routine actually does anything. But there's a racist incident and, you know, the league comes out and condemns it. The player puts out a social media post. Other players get behind that player. There's a league campaign. That's the most shocking thing about this case, is La Liga and Spanish football and Spanish society in general hasn't done that at all. That has not been the response to this incident.
I just want to be clear. Like, am I wrong? Because I'm sure there are incidents around the world where there is sort of a more organized or seemingly organized racist chant. But I think about, like, Raheem Sterling being racially abused by Chelsea supporters when he was with Man City. To my recollection, that was, like, a few people who were removed from the stadium, I believe, got lifetime bans. And that doesn't make it better, but I'm genuinely asking you all, can you think of incidents that were sort of a large chunk of a stadium chanting something like that, yelling something like that? Maybe there are, like, one's done more of ignorance, like the fans chanting about how big Lukaku's penis is a version of racism. But at the same time, like, it's not, I don't know, meant to be. I'm not going to try to justify that one way or the other. Like, I just still think that doesn't even connect here. That doesn't really compare here in my mind.
I think to answer your question, possibly, Taylor, not in the last 25 years or so, I'd say. But maybe there's, like, things like the Park Ji-sung song that Man United fans used to sing in a positive way about their player. But it
that's
was,
the weird one, right? Yeah,
it
that's
was completely
the weird
racist
approach
as well. So,
and it was closest, and it was Man United fans with Lukaku as well.
Right.
The closest thing I can think of, Taylor, where you're talking about, like, a chant that can't be interpreted in any other way than being overtly offensive. This isn't a racist thing, but the Mexican fans with singing doing the homophobic thing when the goalkeeper kicks the ball, I believe. That's where my mind goes. That's the only thing I can think of where, as I say, there's no other way to interpret that. And it's similar with kind of monkey chants around Vinicius. There's no way you can say that's banter in any way. Like, that's just offensive to the nth degree.
All right. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, let's try and look ahead to the future and see if any change will come of this incident which we're currently embroiled in. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Graham, a difficult question for you, and I apologize for this, but do we think less of La Liga after the last week or so? Do we think less of Spanish soccer? I'm asking because I see, we touched on this in the last segment. There are campaigns to kick it out campaigns in England and in the UK for anti-racism campaigns. At the Stadio Olimpico, as I mentioned last night, went to the Coppa Italia final as we record. They were on the screen for the entire time. It said, keep racism out, in English as well, actually. And the reaction that we've had from the top brass at the Liga, Javier Tebas, doesn't suggest they're going to double down on anti-racism campaigns and doesn't suggest they're going to lean into that messaging as hard as maybe other leagues have. So do we think less of them for what's happened?
It depends. It depends by what you mean of La Liga, right? So are you talking about the organization of La Liga, the leadership of La Liga? Because certainly, yes, I do think less of La Liga. Before now, I know Tebas had this reputation for being kind of outspoken and so on. But before now, he was one of the ones that stood up to the European Super League. Before now, I wouldn't say I thought of him affectionately, but I would listen to what he had to say. Now, I'm not really interested in anything that he has to say, quite frankly. So yes, I think it's less of the organisation. It's whether you then extrapolate that out into this difficult to define idea of what is Spanish soccer, right? Because and maybe that's more difficult for me to answer than most, because I've always had like an affinity for Spanish soccer. It's the league, it's the continental European league that I've always had the most love for. I remember when I was like young, there was like an exotic thing about watching Spanish games on a Saturday night. I didn't have Sky at home. I'd have to go and watch it at friends' houses, so I didn't get to see those games very often. And so, and at that time, you had like the Real Madrid Galacticos, you had Ronaldinho era at Barcelona. So there's always been a romance around Spanish football, and it's a league that I am still interested in, maybe more than any other besides the Premier League and the Scottish leagues to this day. So I don't want to think less of Spanish football, but it is difficult when you have a case like this. And also, just the fact that we keep repeating this over and over again, like nothing has changed. I read that Vinicius is going to be the face of a campaign by Nike, an anti-racism campaign. And then I thought, wait a second, we've already done that. Like that was a thing that, remember the Stand Up Speak Up campaign? Does anyone remember how the Stand Up Speak Up campaign started? So Thierry Henry was the face of the Stand Up Speak Up campaign after he was racially abused by Luis Aragonés, famous Spanish football manager. That was in 2004. So between 2004 to 2003, we're essentially just doing the same thing over again. So that maybe does make me think less of Spanish football as a whole.
Yeah, because I really don't want to paint with like a broad brush at a time when we're criticizing certain individuals for doing just that. I really don't love the stuff of like, America, what are you doing? England, what are you doing? Like, I assure you, America doesn't agree with everything our former president used to do and the like. So I don't want to go as far as to say like, yeah, all of La Liga is a problem. Graham, not saying that that's what you're saying, but I guess I'm trying to explain that for me, it makes it harder to watch. It makes it feel like, I don't know, not dissimilar or like similar in spirit to watching the Qatar World Cup and feeling like there's so much nefarious stuff around this that it's hard for me to remove that from just watching soccer. And in some ways, just watching the soccer feels like what they want me to do, to ignore this and have it move on. And I think that's partially why we're doing this episode right now, because, like, again, I've mentioned it multiple times. This is the ninth incident. There have been different effigies of Vinicius. There have been different appeals from Vinicius and from Real Madrid that have been met with like, well, it only happened for a couple seconds, so it's difficult to know if it's racist or just banter. I don't know how that those two things equate, but it makes it hard to watch the league and feel like you aren't being complicit to some extent. Yeah.
Graham, do we think what happens with Vinicius now? We've seen some rumors in The Athletic that he might move on from the league. He's got a year left on his contract at Real Madrid. It'll be quite sad if this was the inspiration for him to leave the club.
Absolutely. It'd be very sad. I haven't actually found the source of that speculation, but I did read a report that it was actually Vinicius himself that brought that up, that maybe he might be forced to leave Real Madrid because this keeps happening. And that would be a huge statement on La Liga and their failure to tackle this problem adequately. That really would make a huge, huge impact. In terms of what will change after this, I mean, the league, Taylor's kind of covered this on Weekend Review, but the league doesn't really have much power, which isn't to say that Tebas should be off the hook or that the league can't punish racism. But I think if there is going to be change, if there's going to be a statement on how things are going to change, it has to come from more than the league. I think Real Madrid, I mentioned this on the Weekend Review, until now, Real Madrid haven't really thrown their full weight behind Vinicius Jr. They've kind of taken a stance of, well, you know, you need to just try and ignore it and get on with your job and kind of, as I say, ignore it. This week, you obviously have the Ancelotti comments. You have a press conference from Florentino Perez held at the Bernabeu earlier this week. So I think they, as a culturally significant institution, not just in Spanish soccer, but in Spanish society as a whole, they can make this, if they might not be able to enforce change, but they can certainly make it more of a talking point than ever before, and make it kind of unavoidable, which is the only way that change is going to happen, is where you make it unavoidable, where people can't just forget about it and move on and sweep it under the rug. So I do think this has been a little bit of a watershed. I just don't have huge faith that there will be fundamental change, but I'm hopeful in terms of the way that clubs are punished, fans are punished, players are punished, we might actually see a bit more action now.
Yeah, and maybe this is naive of me, but I think if we're talking about how there should be more empathy, I think there also, it would be great if there were more individual accountability. Like a minor example, but Dani Ceballos after the game is asked like what his thoughts were, what his impression was. And he said it was bad, but also Vinicius should apologize for antagonizing the supporters. Like, that's your own teammate saying something like that. And I can understand if you don't understand the whole situation or the severity of the incident in the moment, trying to sort of make a statement that is bland enough to be ignored. But in this situation, that comes across as being complicit. And I think if Dani Ceballos came out and said, I got that wrong, I didn't understand, I've now learned, I've furthered my education, that's unacceptable. Like, I think it takes that level of individual accountability for anything to truly change, because as long as you have people speaking out of both sides of their mouths or equivocating or doing whataboutism or whatever it may be, it's just, it doesn't feel like there is this wholehearted attempt to address the situation. It feels like there's more of a, yeah, it was bad, but also, you know, maybe he shouldn't be so good at soccer and then this wouldn't be a problem. Anyway, next game, I think it takes that level of individual, I don't know, responsibility for things to start to feel different.
I think those are some two really good takes to end on here. In Graham saying that he's hopeful for change and there's the ingredients for change, but also we have this caution that if we want change in these kind of things, there has to be a desire for it, right? And that's ultimately the potential missing ingredient in this whole arrangement. I'm going to make an awkward comparison to gun legislation in the US, Taylor. There has to be for repeated incidents, there has to be a desire to make change, and we have
or an acknowledgement that there's a problem. I think that's the other
indeed. And I suppose that goes hand in hand with this.
There has to be a recognition that this is a problem for all, not just for the people,
exactly,
for the victims. And that is the point where things will change. It's when there's that recognition.
All right. Very good. Well, let's end this discussion here. Listener, thank you very much for joining us on this one. We are aware that none of us three are in a position where we could ever suffer this kind of abuse, and it's been a difficult topic to tackle here, but I would appreciate any feedback you have through the usual channels. So thank you very much for this one. Taylor, a pleasure chatting with you about this one, despite the unfortunate topic.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm glad we had some conversations, difficult as they were, and I hope we haven't said anything too foolish or anything along those lines, but I've enjoyed it. Thank you, fellas.
Yes, and likewise, and I hope we haven't painted with too broad a brush, certainly myself, when I was getting slightly anecdotal there. Graham Ruthven, a pleasure chatting with you about this.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Thank you very much indeed, and thank you again, listener, for sticking with us in this one. We'll be back on the feed next week, as always, but for now, bye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.